Hello, Tom. How are you?
Fantastic. The better question is, how are you?
Maybe not fantastic, yeah. But I'm doing fine.
Yeah. I always know you'll bounce back. I didn't suspect you'd be fantastic after last night's game. Let me ask you about focus, because that's the only thing I can think of with this team offense, or road and home defense, because you guys came off six straight games really good defensively, especially in the second half, damn near dominant defensively. And then last night, it kind of slid back a little bit. And I'll bring up the first quarter and tell me if I'm off base here. The end of the first quarter, they scored 11 points in the last a minute 13 seconds. One was a miscommunication between Draymond and Dante. One was a wide open three by some guy. I didn't even know who he was, to be honest with you, but he nails a three. Dort hits a long one. That's like, whatever, if he wants to take those. But then you guys take a shot when you could have taken the last shot of the first quarter. You take it too early. They get a rebound, and Jordan Poole's hugged up on Giddey, who shoots 31% from the line. And all of a sudden, this guy just dribbles into a wide open three, makes it, and you're down 10. To me, that was just the focus doesn't seem to be what it is at home. Am I off base in saying that?
Well, no. I mean, that was kind of a ridiculous close to the quarter. I mean, to not get the last shot was the biggest error in
yes.
that. I mean, you know, guys are going to make shots, and you know this, but for whatever reason, our three-point percentage defense on the road is dramatically higher than it is at home. And so teams have been making shots against us all year on the road, but we can't give them a shot when mathematically, you know, they shouldn't even get one. And,
yeah.
and that was a really disappointing close. We have to take a shot with, you know, about 4 seconds on the clock, not 8 or 9, and give them a chance. And so, yeah, I mean, moments like that, you just, if you add them up and there's 3 or 4 of them,
yeah.
that's the difference in winning and losing. And that's that was the disappointing part of last night. I felt like we just got away from ourselves a little bit.
Yeah, I've noticed this so much so, and not just with you guys. I mean, you guys are culprits of this many times this year, but the league, like I used to say, and back when I was commentating on games, I'd go, Pistons, you know, going to get the last shot of the quarter. Hawks going to get the last shot of the quarter. Now I just say, the Magic are allegedly going to get the last shot of the quarter, because it's like I don't know if there's some voodoo that's happened, like, or the something has changed in the 30 plus years that I've played, or 20 plus years since I did games on TV. But it used to be when you'd get the last shot, you would almost always get the last shot unless something really weird happened. In the NBA now, you never know if the last shot means the team's actually going to get the last shot or not. And for the life of me, I can't understand it, because it's a simple math equation. Look, if they get 0, we cannot lose ground in the last 20 seconds of this quarter. We should at least be a net even going into the timeout or the break between quarters. But so many times, even if they take a 2 and make it early, team will come down and hit a 3. What are you? Now you're -1 in the last 22 seconds of the quarter. What happened with this? Because it used to be a pretty simple concept that teams would be like, okay, you're not scoring again. We may not, but you're not going to score. Something's changed along the line.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just the mentality. The pace of the game has increased so dramatically over the last 5 or 6 years, and I think teams are definitely more in tune with 2-for-1s now. What you know, everybody now is trying to attack, you know, at 30, 35 seconds to get the 2-for-1, so much so that sometimes teams are attacking too early. And
yep.
the other team ends up with the 2-for-1.
Yeah,
so
I've seen that.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing I can really think of is just the youth that's dominating the league, and combined with the pace, means that you're just seeing more errors, more mental errors in situations like that. A lot more transition defensive errors, where, you know, people get beat over the top. So I think it's a combination of pace and youth and you know, it's just, this is the league right now. And so we have to do our best to really, you know, tighten things up and you know, make sure we're closing quarters in a better fashion.
How much time do you spend on trying to take away two-for-ones? Because I've seen some teams – Chris Paul's really good at that. I've always said he kind of understands and manipulates the clock as well as anybody. But with everybody going for two-for-ones now, which is – that amazes me too that some teams don't. It's like you're getting a free shot, a free – I'm not asking you to shoot a hook shot from half court, but if you get a reasonable shot, there's no reason not to try to get two for the price of one. And it happens a lot in college, which it's still, it's math. It's simple math. How much do you try to take it away on defense where if you see the clock at like 42, they're dribbling the ball up. Like if it gets down to 35, 36, press up on them, maybe even a quick double if you want to, how much of that do you concern yourself with? Or is that kind of too kind of cutting it close where you don't want to give up an easy bucket just because you're trying to get take a 2-for-1 out of their hands?
Yeah. Well, it's not always easy to do. The best way to do it, I think, is if you have a foul to give, you know, and a team's coming down at 35 and then they start going attacking the rim, or you know they're going into score mode and you take a foul. But what's happened this year with the new take foul rule, it's really ambiguous as to what is transition and what is not. We've been called for a couple of take fouls where we were actually, you know, trying to foul in the half court to thwart a 2-for-1 or to force a team to take the ball out on the side with less time on the clock, you know, at the end of the quarter. And we got called for take fouls. And so we're at the point now where we don't think it's worth it to use the foul just because of the ambiguity of the rule itself. But it's not easy. You know, you double team and somebody hits a wide open three with 28 seconds and you're like, well, that didn't work very well. Yeah. So, you know, it's a difficult one.
No, there's no doubt about it. How much of last night was kind of going back to point of attack where penetration hurt you? And a lot of times the helper would be there, but then nobody helped him and somebody cut to the bucket and it was an easy slice cut for a layup. Or maybe somebody was just standing underneath because somebody had to leave him to go help somebody else. It seems like that's kind of the root of the problems when you guys struggle a little bit defensively. It's just keeping the ball out of the paint, keeping the ball in front of you and making them play over the top instead of penetrating, and now the defense is all scrambled.
Yeah, I think that was an issue, and you know that's going to be an issue when you play OKC because Gilgeous Alexander and Giddey are both really good at the point of attack. They're both so big and strong, so they're able to knock you backwards and then maneuver to get around you, and I didn't think our shell defense held up. You know, like you said, we'd bring help, but then we weren't helping the helper with another rotation, and they got some open threes and they knocked them down too. I give them credit.
Yeah.
They're not a great 3-point shooting team, but I think they made 17 last night. It was one of those games where they got going. The biggest concern for me really was the third quarter fouling. You know, we were, even with that first quarter giving up, or first half giving up 68 points, we had a 4-point lead midway through the third, and we were in decent shape, but we kept fouling. And, you know, that's been an issue off and on all year. And to me, that was the biggest disappointment defensively last night, was just not keeping them off the line in that third quarter.
Got it.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit. And you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.
Former Navy SEAL Sean Ryan shares real stories from real people from all walks of life on The Sean Ryan Show. Comedian John Crist.
How long have you been in Nashville? Let's see, 2018 is when I moved here. I lived in an apartment. I didn't know anything about it. I lived in L.A.
You were living in L.A.? How was that?
Yeah. Well, let's see. Good for my career. Sent me to rehab, though, so. That's pretty much the sum of it.
The Sean Ryan Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.
Talking to Steve Kerr, head coach of the Golden State Warriors on the UMA guest line. I thought Kuminga had a nice game last night, 28 minutes in the start. How would you evaluate his play of late? I know he's been rebounding pretty well. How do you think he's played over the last couple of weeks?
He's been great, and it's really fun to see. You know, he's such a talented young guy. He's got so much to learn, and I think, you know, it's fun coaching someone like that who's, you know, willing to be coached and wants to be out on the floor. There's no doubt he gets frustrated when I take him out. But I think it's important for young players to go through the process of learning to make the right play over and over again. And so that involves, you know, sometimes taking him out, sometimes playing somebody else, and then, you know, you kind of then you put him back out there after you show him film, and I think his progress has been really impressive here, you know, throughout the season, but especially in the last couple of weeks, and we're starting to see some of the things that we're trying to teach him take hold. I thought last night was one of his best games of working the baseline, following the help, you know, catching passes from Draymond and, you know, in the pocket, or diving to the rim himself and catching passes and moving it along. So JK was really doing a nice job offensively last night, and defensively, you know, we keep putting him on the toughest guy, whether it's, you know, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander last night, you know, Ingram with the Pelicans, Kawhi. I mean, it's this guy is he's really been impressive, and I think our fans should be really excited about him.
When you have sports mixed with your pop culture, along with humor and celebrity interviews, your earbuds are enjoying the Rich Eisen Show.
Kevin Millar, we're all paying rent in Ohtani's world, right?
And the Dodgers world. Game is healthy. Game is good. And, you know, I get asked a lot, is that good for baseball? Yeah, it's good for baseball. This is definitely the team to beat, because that should be your next question, Richie, is this World Series a bust for the Dodgers and Dave Roberts?
Hell yeah. Search for the Rich Eisen Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.
I was going to ask you something, but you brought up Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, so let me sneak this one in there, because he does it all the time, and he's not the only one. Since when did it become okay? I keep asking you. Since when did this happen? since when did it be okay to a guy who's a right-handed driver to be able to use his left hand as a shield, to like his left forearm to like bump guys off? And that's something that I don't remember seeing a bunch of. But everyone does it now. That's how they shield guys. They shield guys with their off arm, not up in the air, but on the ground. Is that something they just stop paying attention to? It's not a point of emphasis anymore. They let you get away with a little bit, just as long as you don't extend it. Because it happens all the time, and it is a significant advantage as a ball handler if you can knock someone back with the forearm and then go up with a jump shot.
Huge advantage, and it's something that has evolved over the years. You know this, but the rules are all skewed towards the offense now. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just the way it is. So you can fend people off at the rim as you go up, you know, with your off arm. In the old days, that was an automatic offensive foul. You can do that. You can, you know, what they say is you can use the off arm as long as you don't extend it. And so it gives a huge advantage to the guys who are really strong, who can bump you without fully extending the arm, you know, but it's still a pretty good bump. The offense has the advantage these days with the way we're interpreting the rules, and you just have to adjust to that.
God, if I could have played today, I could have averaged 8.9. Would have bumped me up at least a tenth of a point. did you talk at all to Draymond about the play last night where he just kind of quit on the play when he was open in the middle of the court and Jordan decided to go back up top? Draymond was right. If he would have had the ball, he could have made a play. You guys didn't end up paying a price for that because I forgot who hustled back on defense. Maybe in Clay that stopped the stopped the layup. But it's just kind of an energy sucker where, you know, you see one of your best players do something like that and it kind of brings everybody else kind of down with him. And I know, like, I can't ding him too much because he works his ass off and he always has, but that one play was just kind of like, and maybe he knows, like, he was frustrated, but it can't happen, right?
Yeah, he knows. We talked about it at halftime. He came back out for the third quarter and competed and was ready to go. It was, I thought we were disconnected a couple times in the first half. There was a little bit of frustration, and Draymond knows, you know, it's okay to be frustrated, but yeah. can't do it that way. And he knew he was wrong, you know, I don't think it's going to happen again. I think the biggest thing for us is we've got to keep going because, you know, we're just in this place where we've actually played pretty well. You know, we won mm-hmm. the five in a row. I thought we played well enough each of the last two nights to win. But we let both games kind of slip away. And let's give credit to the other teams, too.
Sure. You know,
Anthony Davis had an amazing game on Sunday. And OKC made some really tough shots last night. They made the plays. But we're trending in the right direction, and we just have to keep going. Our guys got to keep the faith because we're heading in the right direction. We're really hopeful we can get Wiggins and Peyton back healthy, you know, at the end of the year. And we just feel like if we can get to that point, we know what our team's capable of. And that's, you know, that's what I'm hanging my hat on. It's just, we're a championship group. We just did it last year. We know how to do this, but let's get there. And the only way to get there is to you know, keep forging ahead through the frustration. And that was the disappointing part of last night is we let the frustration get to us.
Yeah.
How's Kevon Looney feeling? We were talking about his streak yesterday. I don't think he's going to get to Ripken, but Gehrig's in play. I was hoping I was hoping he wasn't going to have the streak snapped. How's he feeling after yesterday?
He's feeling a lot better. I talked to him this morning, and he said he was better. He was not himself last night. You could see it. You know, he missed some shots around the rim. He just wasn't moving well. He was pretty sore. It's one of the reasons we only played him, I think, 11 or 12 minutes. But he told me he's feeling better. Today was a day off, so that'll be helpful. And we're going to need him tomorrow. We're playing a big, strong team in Memphis.
It's interesting because not only is Ja going to miss the game, but Clark is out. I'm not sure when Adams is supposed to be back.
He's out. He's out. We just got the report.
So they're missing both their centers. So it's going to be a different team. I mean, they're still really athletic, but not as, you know, well, I shouldn't say not as bulky because Adams is big, but Clark's a guy that can get up down the court. What do they miss? What do you think they miss when Clark is out? Because I really like him. I think he's a mm-hmm. really good backup center. He's athletic. He can jump. He can give you vertical spacing. He can hit that little push shot from like 7 or 8 feet. He hits the boards. He's active. I mean, I like him. When you guys play him, like what problems does he present?
Yeah, offensive rebounds. You know, he's really bouncy and he plays that pocket well and he goes in and he comes in with energy. That's what you want off the bench, a guy who's going to really play hard and get up and down the floor. So he's been a really good player for them the last few years. That's a big loss. And, you know, they're going through some adversity. I've been so impressed with Memphis and just, you know, organizationally, coaching-wise, Taylor's a hell of a coach. And what they've built over the last few years has been so impressive. And, obviously, they're going through some stuff right now, really a good young team, great organization, very impressive group. So even without some of their guys tomorrow, we know how tough it's going to be.
Yeah, I'm with you on Taylor Jenkins. I think he does a real, real nice job there and handles himself really well as well. Give us just so people that don't understand, including me, give me an update on Lamb, like, because the whole like fail 40 games 50 games, and then how does this whole thing work? Does he have to miss like the next three games because you call Quinones up? I'm kind of lost with the whole thing, so tell me how it works and when he can play again and what has to happen for him to continue playing and all that stuff.
Yeah, so he's used up the days available on the two-way contract. He's played 50 games. His games were increased when we signed Lester Quinones because if you cared, the number of two-way games allowed is based on if you have 14 or 15 players. So if you have 15 on your roster, then the two ways can play up to 50. And if you have 14, they can only play 45. So, so we bought some extra games signing Lester, but Lamb's days are up. And now the only way he can play is if we sign him to the 15th roster spot. And so that's something that we're considering now organizationally, and that decision will be made. You know, we'll after we can't do it now because Lester is on the he is the 15th guy as the 10-day contract guy. So we can't make any decision until after Lester's 10 days are up.
So what happens if, let's say, theoretically, you sign Lamb and then Jerome gets to his 50 games? What happens at 50? Does he go back to the G League? Does he get cut if you don't have a roster spot? How do you deal with somebody who reaches their 50 and you don't have any roster spots available?
Well, they just can't play in games. They can remain on the roster.
Oh, okay.
And one of the reasons you do it is because you control, like, basically it becomes restricted free agency in the summer. And so one of the reasons you hang on to a two-way guy whose games are up is you want to get him back the following summer, and you have better control. We really like both guys, and they've obviously have both been really important for us and helped us win a lot of games this year. They're both vets. They've been around, so they understand the game. They understand the league, and we've been really blessed. And I think organizationally, you know, it's impressive what our front office has done over the years, finding these two-way guys who have helped in a lot of ways, whether it's Damian Lee or Juan Toscano-Anderson, Quinn Cook. Obviously this year, Lamb and Ty. I mean, we've found a lot of gems our organization has, and that's there's a lot of different ways to find players. It doesn't have to be through the draft. It's you just got to find guys who can play and who can help, and these guys have done that.
So if he gets to 50 games, he can still go shag balls and stuff like that.
He could. He could go take batting practice with the Giants.
Yeah, run the track, right? Fly foul pole to foul pole.
Fly balls in center field.
Go get your workout in. Yeah. Oh man, no, but I agree with you. And it's so funny, Steve. I don't know if you run up against it, but I spend my time always explaining to people, like even friends of mine, like why do those guys play? Like what and like. You got to understand, like, not everyone needs to score 20. If you can rebound, compete, being in the right spot offensively and defensively are of huge importance to a team and a coach, knowing what to expect from people. I don't think the average NBA fan understands, like, the little things. Yeah. They understand the points, rebounds, assists, but the little things. Because you got guys who could score. It's not like you need somebody else out there, but just by the fact he can hit a three, both of them, it spaces the court, and it makes it easier for everyone else to work instead of somebody standing in the middle of the lane. It makes it harder to run your offense when you do that, but I agree with you. I mean, both those guys, for what you guys got them for and what they've given this team, I for one appreciate those sort of little things that maybe most people overlook.
Well, we just call guys like that connectors. You know, they connect the game, and the beauty of basketball is it's a five-man puzzle, and the puzzle has to fit. And if you have five guys who all do the same thing out there, it's not going to work. Just not. The puzzle has to fit, and you need guys to complement other players, and that's why Lamb and Ty are important for us. We've been fortunate to have guys like that who are really top end talents. Sean Livingston, Andre Iguodala, David West. I mean, these guys were all star or near all star players in their careers. And when you can get connectors who are also those type of athletes, that's kind of the ultimate. But if you don't have those guys, then you obviously you're still looking for players who can connect the game and get the ball moving side to side, who can catch and shoot at the right time where the offense doesn't get stagnant, or in Ty's case, can take care of the ball and get you into your offense every time down the floor and have a 4-to-1 assist to turnover ratio for the entire season. All that stuff leads to winning. And so it may not be spectacular, and you know, people are wondering, well, you know, that this guy can do a 360 dunk. Why isn't he playing more? It's just not how the game works. It's got to connect, you know?
And the interesting,
if the Niners are missing their left tackle, if Trent Williams goes down, you don't say, well, why didn't they just bring in Ayuk? Ayuk is so talented. Why didn't they play Ayuk more? Like, no, they need a left tackle, damn it.
And the interesting thing is, connectors can be different depending on which team you're talking about, right? You don't need the same connector for Orlando that you may need with your team or with Indiana or, name a team. Everyone needs different of connectors on their team to make the puzzle fit. I mean, we've all seen teams that are super talented. You look at them and go, God, how does that team lose? And you watch them play and go, it just doesn't fit. They have too many guys that do the same thing, try to do the same thing. They don't have the little guys that'll set screens, that'll dive on the floor, that'll space the guy, all those little things. And with your system, the way you guys run it, what they do is very, very important. There's no doubt about it. So I think we've taken up enough of your time. Are you going to Beale Street tonight? Little. It only take you about 30 seconds to walk up and down.
Like 30 yards long, I think.
When I saw it the first time, I was like, "That's it."
You always try to get me in trouble every time we come to Memphis. You try to make fun of Beale Street.
Oh, I think you just did. Have a lovely evening, and we'll see you at home this weekend.
All right, guys. We'll see you later.
See you, guys.
The Rolling Stone Music Now podcast gets inside the biggest stories with Rolling Stone's senior writer, Brian Hyatt.
Now, here is my conversation with Jacob Knoll. Your story is an amazing one, and obviously you lost your dad when you're only 1 year old.
It was definitely a screwy way to grow up. I think that a lot of people never heard of who I am, and then they see me join this band, and they must think this kid must have just been handed everything, or nepotism kid. It's a gift that I have an opportunity to sing in such a big band like my father and my uncle's band, Sublime.
Rolling Stone Music Now, wherever you listen.